Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Oh, look, I already did my workout hair.
Uh-oh.
It's my Sporty Spice ponytail. Because it's the weekend, bitches. It's happy hour. And come on, can I say this is a double boom?
Yeah.
Happy hour.
Yeah.
Hello, Attorney General Eric Holder.
Oh.
What? What?
What?
Dr. Wendy Walsh. What? Right, who we've been trying to get on forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we settled on Your Highness. I didn't know what.
For Holder?
I was so nervous. Yeah. I wasn't sure the honorific. I was like, Mr. Attorney General, Your Excellency, Highness.
He appreciated the Your Highness.
Yes, I believe he wanted to go with Your Highness ultimately.
Yes.
But it was, you know, kind of, people don't come slumming like that around here.
No. Nope.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, he name dropped left and right.
Yep.
Merrick Garland, known him for years, whatever. But okay. A lot of great stuff to say. Mm-hmm. Dr. Wendy Walsh is helping me deal with my, I am just a fuck stack of anger. Do you know what I'm saying?
What's a fuck stack?
I don't know. It's like, I feel like I'm ready to blow every day because of anti-vaxxers and right, affecting my loved ones, right? That I'm just, I don't know whether it's affecting me from the inside, the outside. It's eating me alive.
Yeah. She's going to blow.
Right. So Dr. Wendy Walsh, not only fantastic, great KFI radio show, Mating Matters,
That's her podcast.
Yes, her podcast. But also she was one of the original Bill O'Reilly accusers.
Yep.
And, you know, was one of the Time Magazine People of the Year for being, you know, blowing the whistle on sexual harassment at Fox News. Fascinating. Let's just get to it. What the fuck? Why won't I shut my pie hole?
Shut up.
So we can hear.
Shut up, lady.
Do it.
Happy hour. Yes, I'm in the caucus going, shut up so your dead guests can talk. Don't say a word. Call the show something else. Happy, happy hour. I don't even know the honorific. Is it Your Excellency? Is it General? All right, I'm fine. Just settle. Stomach, settle. 82nd Attorney General of the United States, the third longest serving Attorney General in United States history, the first African-American to hold that office. Good morning, Attorney General Eric Holder.
Hey, Stephanie, how are you? And, you know, you can call me Eric. Trust me, I've been called a lot worse than that. So,
fair.
So I've heard. I cannot call you Eric, Your Excellency. I don't know, A, how I got this booking, and B, let's just dive right in. Thank you so much, first of all, for all the work you're doing, because I keep saying nothing else matters if we don't have if we lose the right to vote. And you are doing such amazing work, you know, both when you were Attorney General and since then. Talk to us, you know, specifically about what you're doing, because it's not just the For the People Act, right? It is.
Right.
We have an attack on voting rights, the upcoming redistricting fight. Talk to us about everything you're doing.
Sure. There is a multi-pronged attack on our democracy. I mean, that's the headline. And the core of this attack on our democracy is an attack on the right to vote. Whether it is these suppression bills being passed in a variety of states, whether it's gerrymandering that I've really been focusing on since 2017, racial and partisan gerrymandering, or the influence of dark money that has really had a negative impact on the ability of people, the people of this country, to determine the policy direction of the nation. This is, you know, I'm not being hyperbolic. I'm not being alarmist. This is a moment in history where we have to stand up for what we say this government, what we say this nation is all about. You know, I've often said that I think, you know, we learn from history. And if we look back at the past century, we saw that authoritarian and fascist regimes rose not because they were strong, but because democracy was weak or that the defense of democracy was inadequate. This is our moment to stand up for democracy.
Now, unlike when you're on Rachel Maddow and she says, did I get anything wrong in that opening segment? And everybody says, no, you're going to go, yes, you got everything wrong, Stephanie. But let me just ask you, because a lot of us don't understand, you know, the difference between the voting, you know, the attacks on voting rights and redistricting, gerrymandering, what all that works.
Right.
I know we have
right.
apportionment underway. So there's obviously, you know, you're at the front of, you know, fighting for fair maps. What does all that mean? Because I sometimes, Your Excellency, Attorney, Mr. General, I feel like, you know, Democrats disarm, you know, like I because we do want generally fairness, where Republicans will obviously go to any lengths, will go any lengths to cheat to win. And it feels like I've heard about gerrymandering in general that in some places Democrats have just said, oh, no, we're going to leave it up to a fair nonpartisan. Where Republicans aren't fighting the same way on gerrymandering, are they? Yeah. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, they're not fighting the same way. I mean, just kind of some basic stuff. I mean, we do the census every 10 years. After the census, a year or so after, we then redraw the legislative lines for state legislatures as well as the United States House of Representatives. And what the Republicans did in 2011, Princeton University did a study and said it was the worst gerrymandering of the past half century. And that essentially means that you create these safe districts so that Republicans simply cannot be beat. You can turn out huge numbers of Democrats, but because of the way in which the lines are drawn, Republicans are in these safe seats, which means that they're not concerned about a general election. They're concerned about a primary challenge, and that drives them further and further to the right. And you end up with legislatures, both at the state level and the United States House of Representatives, that do things that are inconsistent with the desires of the people that these folks are supposed to represent. And so, yeah, you're right. You know, people ask me, well, what is gerrymandering? Bottom line, gerrymandering is cheating. And they have indicated, that is, Republicans have said in their own words, they want, this is their term, they want to secure a decade of power. And they want to do so by suppressing the vote, but also by redrawing the lines in such a way that they assure themselves general election victories. And the notion that, you know, Democrats are disarming by fighting for fairness, I think it is just doesn't quite get at it. Because the reality is, if the process is fair, Democrats and progressives will do just fine. We are actually fighting for fairness. We're fighting for a process that will lead to an increased number of Democrat progressives at the state level, as well as in the United States House of Representatives. We don't have to gerrymander. I mean, that really is the bottom line. We don't have to gerrymander. Now, and when they do, we've got to be extremely forceful and fight them in the courts and every other way that we possibly can to make sure that their gerrymandering attempts are not successful.
Well, and I know that's what, because some of them have come right out and said it, right? The gerrymandering is going to help us win, you know, in 2022, just automatically. I think Ronnie Jackson has said that. So talk to us about, I know you waited just hours after the Census Bureau released new apportionment figures to file the first lawsuits of this decade's redistricting process, correct? A preview. They say it's going to be the most litigated remap in American history. So talk to us about that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, let's be honest here. You know, in 2011, Republicans had a thing called Project Red Map, and they focused on redistricting, and they maintained their power as a result of that effort in 2011 throughout the course of this decade. You know, 2012, the first time of the elections after that, that unbelievable gerrymandering effort, Democrats got over 1.2 million more votes for the United States House of Representatives than Republicans did and had a 33-seat deficit, even though we had a million more votes. And so what we're bound and determined to do, we have filed lawsuits already in Pennsylvania, Minnesota, and Louisiana because we see divided government there. We know there's going to be an impasse. We know that the Republicans are going to try to do all kinds of things in those states. We file suits in North Carolina. We have filed suits in Virginia. We have stood for keeping people in place like Tony Evers, the governor in Wisconsin, Tom Wolf in Pennsylvania. So we have governors who will be in a position to veto the bad maps that these Republicans are going to try to put in place. We have a multi-pronged strategy where we support candidates who will support a fair redistricting process. We bring litigation where that is possible. And then we also galvanize the people to stand for a fair process. And among the things that we have stood for are, as what you've indicated, the creation of these nonpartisan commissions. We now have them in Michigan, Colorado, Utah. If we have those things, though these fair measures in place, Democrats will do fine. I mean, you look at what happened in North Carolina after our lawsuit. We went from a 10-3 map to an 8-5 map, 10-3 favoring Republicans to one that now favors Republicans 8-5. They're now saying they want to draw a map with their additional seat that would go back to 10-4. You know, so this is the nature of the mindset that we are facing. But our multi-pronged strategy has proven to be successful. But boy, we need the For the People Act.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to ask you about. Is it seems like we can't get to any of these other issues we care about if we don't have. I mean, this is based on the former president's delusions, as far as I can tell. These bills in what is it, 48 states mm-hmm. now? These voter
right,
suppression
right.
bills. So what
yep.
is it? Yeah, go ahead.
No, but you know what? There we're kind of giving the Republicans a pass. Yeah, a lot of this stuff is based on the big lie of Donald Trump from the November election and the way in which the Republicans have protected it, adhered to it. And I would also tell your listeners, you know, the big lie is not a phrase that we just coined over the course of the last couple of months. Look up who used the big lie and what they did with the big lie in the last century. And so, you know, Republicans have been talking about voter fraud and the need to have these voter suppression techniques related to this non-existent voter fraud. The Brennan Center has said you're more likely to be hit by lightning than to actually cast an in-person fraudulent ballot. And so they've used the lie of voter fraud to come up with these suppression measures over the course of these last few decades. It's not just since, you know, the last couple of months. They've been doing this for decades, abetted by a Supreme Court that is at least ideological in nature and potentially even partisan in nature, that has essentially given them, you know, free rein to do that which they want to do. And so, again, we've got to be prepared to fight them in every way that, you know, that we possibly can.
What are your hopes for a carve out for voting rights? I mean, for any of these voting bills?
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing I can say is that, you know, I've been in touch with people at the highest levels at the White House, the highest levels in Congress, and there's more going on, I think, than people than has been shared, and that's fine.
Yeah.
My hope is that there will be a carve out. We can't at some point. It's going to come down to a binary choice. Are you for an arcane Senate process or procedure that has been used to throttle progressive measures over the course of the last 100 years or so, or do you stand for our democracy? And my hope would be that the senators who have the power, the capacity to put us on the path to having a more fair union will make the right choice. Because here's the deal. We as Democrats have the power right now to pass the For the People Act.
Yeah.
We've got 50 votes. We've got Kamala Harris. We've got already a good bill coming out of the House of Representatives. If in 2022 we go to the people and we say we are unable to pass these democracy protecting measures, that's not a good recipe. That's not a good recipe for the kind of success that we're going to need to maintain control of the House and of the Senate.
Yep. Yep. Now, Attorney General, Excellency, sir, just speaking of you being called
Stephanie, I think Your Highness would be okay.
There
if you
go.
Want to go with
okay.
Yes.
Your Highness.
If you want to go with an honorific, let's deal with that.
Your Highness, Excellence, speaking of you being calling other names and been, you know, honestly, the target of partisan, vindictive, nothing burgers, I know you know on our side there's been a lot of trepidation whether actual justice will be done for the actual multitude of crimes committed by Trump and his associates. So are you heartened, as I am, by these recent moves at the DOJ between the Barrick indictment, Mo Brooks, them not defending him, Rudy Giuliani, testimony in January 6th. Are you heartened by the direction of the Justice Department right now?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I've known Merrick Garland for, maybe 25 years. I've known Lisa Monaco, Vanita Gupta, Kristen Clark, all the people who are running the Justice Department now. These are good people. I hope that they will stay on the bent that they're on now, which is to be aggressive. You know, this is not the transition from a Republican administration to a Democratic one, and you're kind of reluctant to look back and challenge policy determinations. There was law breaking that was done. There was norm breaking that was done by this prior administration. That cannot stand. I mean, I got a lot of grief when I decided to look back at the Republican administration that preceded me and looked at, the torture, the use of torture in the fight against terror. Got a lot of grief for that, but it was the right thing to do. My hope would be that Merrick and the folks who surround him will understand that what they tried to do, what the Republicans tried to do, was to subvert our democracy. And that is simply not a policy choice. That goes to, threatening the institution, the republic itself. And as a result, you've got to be aggressive, and you've got to prosecute, you've got to investigate. I think they've had a good week in that regard. And my hope would be that what they've done this week will carry on in the weeks to come.
Yeah, finally, because this is just the breaking latest, Justice Department warned states about unusual Trump-inspired audits. I've been wondering about this forever, how any of this is legal. Trump-supporting politicians in states around the country consider conducting conspiratorially, quote-unquote, audits of the 2020 election returns. The Justice Department warned yesterday federal law requires states to maintain possession of or direct supervision over election records that some states are handing over to ill-prepared contractors. The DOJ interprets the Civil Rights Act to require that covered elections records be retained either physically by election officials themselves or under their direct administration supervision. This has been my question, Your Excellency, is how is this legal, what they're allowing to happen in Arizona, where now everybody has to replace all their election equipment? It's how are you allowed to take elections, actual ballots, to some, cabin in Montana, literally?
Yeah, I think, again, that letter, that warning letter, is an appropriate first step, because the reality is the conducting of these fraudits, and that's exactly what they are, fraudits. It's interesting, in Arizona, you're going to do this thing, but you only look at the place where you see the greatest number of Democrats. Well, wait a minute, what about going, if you're going to do an audit, why don't you do it statewide? But how about let's not do it at all, given the fact that all of these things have been reviewed, certified, and no one found any degree of fraud. So I think, this letter, this warning is a good first step, but then it's got to be followed up. And to the extent that you see replicated what happened in Arizona, in other states, the Justice Department's got to look in its quiver and figure out what arrows that it has, filing, civil suits, bringing regulatory action to stop them from doing that, which puts at risk, the integrity of the process, not only in the minds of the American people, but also physically. I mean, because what you just said is really important. You turn over these machines, and now you've seen in Pennsylvania, I guess Arizona, they're going to have to spend taxpayer money to replace these machines that these idiots in Arizona, have had access to, and as a result have potentially contaminated.
Yeah.
And so for any number of reasons, we have got to stop this nonsense. This is all to try to satisfy, the latest version of the big lie has absolutely no basis in fact, and we've got to be extremely aggressive and be unafraid. Yeah, the Republicans are going to say, oh, you're politicizing this stuff. I was going to say a bad word, BS. We're not politicizing anything. All we're doing is standing for democracy and for a fair system. You guys are the ones who are afraid of the voters. They don't think they can win in fair elections, and so they're going to do whatever they can to hold on to the power that they've illegitimately got.
I could have really used the publicity if you would use the whole word, Your Highness, but I will. But please come back. Let's do this again. I'll be less nervous, I swear, Your Excellency.
I thought we agreed it was going to be Your Highness.
Your Highness. All right, we'll stick with Your Highness.
Yeah, there goes that one.
My mother always, in Queens, New York, my mother always said I was a prince, so I thought that was kind of where we'd go.
You are the official prince of the Stephanie Miller Show.
There you go.
82nd Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder. Thanks so much. We'll see you next
time. All right, thanks, Stephanie, for having me.
All right.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow.
Come on. That's cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I feel extra snorty.
Oh, you're going to save that and play that back over and over and over again, aren't
spank
you?
Bank.
Your Highness.
In the spank bank.
Okay. Uh-huh. I didn't know what. I was literally like, I'm not sure I've had anyone of this stature. I'm like, I don't attorney. At least a former president.
Right.
We've had Carter on, and we know to say Mr. President.
Yeah.
But I was like, what are you, Mr. Attorney General, and, Sir Excellency?
And the most impressive thing is he took the ball and ran with it.
Yes, he did.
He did.
Well, do you ever catch yourself thinking when you're looking in the mirror, I wish those under-eye bags would just go away. You're not alone. Bags and puffiness under the eyes are a problem for millions of American men and women. Until now, introducing the new GenuCell Serum with plant stem cell technology from Chamonix. Susan from New Jersey wrote me, I've been using GenuCell for a couple of months. The puffiness around my eyes is gone. Even the crow's feet and small lines have disappeared and haven't come back. I love this product. I use it under my eyes, around my cheekbones, and on my eyelids. With its instant effects, Chamonix says you'll see results in the first 12 hours or your money back. I love it. I use the entire line of products. It is my favorite skincare I've ever used. They guarantee it, though. Results in the first 12 hours or your money back. Order now. Get 50% off all GenuCell packages for summer. Go to lovegenucell.com/Stephanie. That's love, GenuCell.com/Stephanie. lovegenucell.com/Stephanie. I use it every single day. I get so many compliments. Check it out. lovegenucell.com/Stephanie. Let me explain this love story.
Okay.
I'm at Lisa Bloom's party. This possibly tall, beautiful blonde woman traipses in. And then I was like, who is that? Oh, it's Dr. Wendy Wall. She's straight and she's with her boyfriend. And then that's when the music died. However, if you recall, first of all, we were on KFI together.
That's right.
I believe.
Yep.
KFI Radio. She has a fantastically successful radio show, the Dr. Wendy Wall Show on KFI. Mm-hmm. iHeart Media has her wildly popular podcast,
yep.
Mating Matters. Fantastic. Author of three books, one of Time Magazine's Persons of the Year in 2017, after speaking out about harassment at Fox News. She currently teaches in the psychology department at California State University, and just in time for Bill O'Reilly's tour, Dr. Wendy Walsh. I'm so glad we finally did this, because this was two Lisa Bloom parties ago. We tried to do this, and then COVID hit, and LA traffic.
Our lives just got put on hold for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And now they're back in a new way. Like, I love this, having to just do everything from home. It's great.
Yeah, I know. It's for those of us that were shut-ins, that I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. I'm going to be even more of a homebody.
Coincidentally, I am quarantined right now, literally. I don't know if you can see the bedroom door right there. That is, behind that door.
Don't tease us, Wendy Walsh. Don't.
Is my 18-year-old daughter who has COVID.
Oh, wow.
But we're all fully vaccinated, but these are these breakthrough cases.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Right? So we're all quarantined here now. I tested negative, but still, I've been exposed to her, so I'm hanging out at home.
Can we talk first about that as a psychologist? I mean, in terms of psychology, Doc, I mean, isn't this like not just PTSD, but to feel like we're going back in the woods after World War II, that it's like they're just saying mask mandates again nationwide, that we may be going back into lockdown. What is this doing to people psychologically? I didn't have far to go to crazy, doctor.
Well, the good news is this. Like, we are seeing fewer hospitalizations and fewer deaths, but that doesn't mean no deaths, right? Mm-hmm. So even one death is too many.
Yeah.
And that's why, as a community, and, you know, I'm originally Canadian, so I'm a little bit of a collectivist culture person, like what's good for the masses is good for the individual. So therefore, we should all wear our masks for a while. But the anxiety is less. Remember, Stephanie, at the beginning, if you were out walking, mm-hmm. you were 20 feet from the next person mm-hmm. and putting your mask on. And now we're like, okay, it's outside, we should be okay. And we were afraid to even step inside a restaurant. But now we understand that masks work.
Yeah. Okay, but doctor, what do you do if anger is eating you from the inside out about people that are not vaccinated and are putting your loved ones, like my mother and my best friends, at risk, right?
Well, the research shows that bombarding them with information does not work, right? Because then you're just stuck in the prefrontal cortex arguing. But if you can appeal to what their fears are, collude with their fears, and then come in a back door. So in other words, you might say something like, I can understand how scary this must be. You know, so if you were to get vaccinated, you would have to be a really brave person, because I know how much you're afraid of it, right? So we're talking about keying
into that's you, Chris. You're all about coddling people that aren't vaccinated.
No. Yeah, exactly. You know, I've also used the scarcity thing. Yeah. I called a friend and I'm like, So, you know, all my relatives in Canada that have been waiting for vaccines, they have so many vaccines now because they're taking them from the U.S. Mm-hmm. because nobody's getting them. So you better get yours quicker. We're going to run out here.
Or dirty foreigners are going to take them. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, no, my best friend's in Australia. She's also a psychologist. And she's, you know, she said they can't, you can't get, they have a real scarcity. I mean, people are dying all over the world for something here that we're going, oh, I don't want it. I don't, it's just, okay, let's talk about, okay, so obviously Bill O'Reilly has just announced this tour with Donald Trump. I don't know if they're going to add Bill Cosby, but it's, what do people like you, does it trigger you? I hate to use the psychological buzzword.
Yeah.
But when you, so because you were famously one of the first people that were brave enough, Lisa Bloom was your lawyer, obviously our mutual good friend. You came out and spoke about, but first of all, talk about, yours was a little different. You felt your romantic snubbing of Bill O'Reilly cost you your paid job at Fox News because you were on, I remember you hosted Extra and then yeah. you were everywhere. You were on CNN and O'Reilly Factor. So tell us what happened because this was really so just,
In a nutshell, I was a regular guest on the O'Reilly Factor and one day I got an email from an employee at Fox saying that Mr. O'Reilly would be coming to Los Angeles and would I have dinner with him? This was all very business. Mm-hmm. And as you know, in our business, it's very common to sort of try people out as guests and then get them on as a paid contributor. So I regarded it as a business dinner. I brought my own car, met at the restaurant. The employee at Fox said he was staying at the Bel Air Hotel. And I said, oh, well, they have a good Wolfgang Puck restaurant there. We should eat there. It's easy. And within the first 5 minutes, I didn't have to ask him about being brought on as a paid contributor. He told me Roger Ailes, the then CEO, was his best friend, and they'd like to offer me a job as a paid contributor. So it was great. And I'll be honest, the rest of the dinner was very professional. You do things like adults do. You talked about things like how many kids you have, how old are your kids, your early days at Fox, et cetera, your career stuff. It was only at the end of the dinner. He simply said the words, let's get out of here. And I actually thought maybe he meant to go to the bar to continue talking about my career at Fox. So when we passed the hostess stand at the Bel Air Hotel, I turned left towards the bar. He turned right to what I now know are the bedrooms. Mm. Right. So it was awkward. We were walking away from each other for a bit. And then I kind of, again, thinking, well, he's from out of town. He must not know.
Sure, that's so, it.
Yeah.
Bad sense of direction. Yeah.
I literally did a like, I think the bar is this way. And by that point, he had turned and caught up with me again. He's 6'7". Mm-hmm. He bumped me on the shoulder and in a very different voice said, no, come back to my suite.
Hey. Ew.
And I was a woman of a certain age and I've been through this a million times. And you know what I thought? Ugh, another one. Here we go. Mm. So I just said, oh, I'm sorry, Bill. I can't do that. You know, women, we like to apologize for ourselves.
Yes, of course we do.
I'm sorry. I can't do that. And he goes, what? Do you think I'm going to attack you? And I said, I quickly thought about our conversation at dinner. And I said, you know, Bill, we're both raising teenage daughters. Why don't we model some good choices for them? Ooh. Well, at that moment, he didn't want to be thinking about his teenage daughter.
Right.
But he grumpily went to the bar with me. I ordered a glass of water. He complained about the price of soda water and expensive hotels. I offered to pay. He looked at my purse, said it was an ugly bag. Basically, I called Uber and left. And the next time it was my time to do the show, I was basically iced out.
Wow.
So I knew this. And I literally, when I say didn't care, I felt very sad and it hurt a lot. Yeah. And for some reason, when women are sexually harassed, we accidentally feel shame because patriarchy somehow told us that it was our fault.
Yeah.
And so I sort of didn't want to tell anybody because I was so embarrassed about it all.
Yeah.
And then a number of years later, a sleuth of a detective, New York Times reporter, Emily Steele, who won the Pulitzer Prize for this article, called me and basically said, you know, I noticed you used to be on the show and then you disappeared. You want to tell me what happened? And I just said, well, because I wouldn't go back to his hotel room.
Yeah.
Then came the 4 months of her trying to convince me to go on record as the face of the story because Fox has systematically silenced a good dozen women before I came along. I never had a complaint.
He just, his lawyers just silenced Andrea Macris. They got her bumped off The View. I mean, hopefully she'll be able to go back on, but she's decided to say the heck with the NDA. And, you know, but he was able to get lawyers to make The View not have her on. So
yeah, no, they sent me a pretty scary lawyer letter, which our friend Lisa Bloom sent immediately to, these were his personal lawyers who sent me like a doom and gloom. Literally the last line was, "You shall be forewarned." I'm like, what are you, Darth Vader? So he takes that letter and sends it to Fox attorneys and says, oh, this is how your employee continues to threaten and harass his victims. Yeah. You better tell him to knock it off or we'll use this in court.
Yeah. Wow. Can I just say you're so smart? I just wonder if that's ever worked on any sexual harasser. Let's model some good choices for our daughters. I'm discussing that and slowing down at all. Okay.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
But yeah, I was in the 2000s, you raised two daughters, and then you went got a midlife PhD in clinical psychology and returned, right, and that's when you came back. You've had, well, it was interesting, this 60 Minutes piece just aired, and you were saying to us off air here, the reason why you didn't go back to his room when you were, what age you were then, is because you were, tell the story, this guy that they just profiled on 60 Minutes.
I learned from the worst. You know, I was a little Canadian teenager in Toronto and was spotted by a modeling scout. And with stars in her eyes, my mother dropped me off at a modeling agency in Paris with a lecherous head of modeling agent who went on to become head of Elite Worldwide for years. A friend of Jeffrey Epstein, by the way, who liked to finance these. Jeffrey Epstein liked to invest in modeling agencies around the world so he could get access to teenagers, right? He would set up fake photo shoots on his islands. And I mean, he would have photographers there and all that, but that got the teenagers there. So this guy, sadly, who held my mother's hand in a cafe and said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of your sweet little daughter." It's been many years and I've told the story, so I've kind of worked through it all in therapy. But he raped me anally when I was a teenager.
Aye, aye, aye.
And today there are 12 women led by the model Carrie Otis. Remember Carrie Otis?
Sure, yeah, sure.
And she had written about it in her biography in 2013 and went on a press tour and nobody asked her about this. Nobody cared back then.
Yeah.
And so we have about 12 women all over the world, from Australia to Europe to the different places in America and Canada, who are now trying to get this guy prosecuted.
Yeah.
In France.
Yeah.
He lives in Spain now, but they're doing... The rapes took place in France.
I know you're thinking, stop using psychological buzzwords on me, but in terms of triggering, what does it feel like when you see the president? First of all, that Trump even became president when how many women had, you know, credible accusations, including E. Jean Carroll? I mean, does it make you, how does this, I mean, I know you're a certain age now that's a psychologist, and as you said, you've been through all this, but when you see a Bill Cosby go free or you see Donald Trump so far get away with this, does it, how does it make you feel? Or what do you, I mean...
Well, I'm an optimist, Stephanie, and I really believe we are marching towards matriarchy, and we are taking down the patriarchy. And the way to take down the patriarchy are a few leaps forward and a few steps back.
Yeah.
And I think our mission hasn't changed. We have to very comfortably, men and women, talk about the fact that we are feminists. We have to talk, what it is doing is allowing the conversation to continue. Every time something happens, we're able to bring it up again. Like even I do a lot of public speaking pre-COVID and you know, a lot of women don't even understand the difference between quid pro quo sexual harassment, toxic environment sexual harassment, and sexual assault. These are three distinct legal differences, right?
Yeah.
And so you can be in a workplace where it's just a lot of locker room talk or you're kind of sexualized and people are like, why are you wearing that today? Look at your butt or whatever. And that can be a sexually toxic environment. That's one form. Quid pro quo is like Bill O'Reilly. Come back to my hotel room if you want to stay on the show, right?
Yeah.
You do this, I'll do that. But then sexual assault is something different. So when I was doing a lot of media around the Fox News thing, male journalists would say, I mean, he didn't actually touch you, right? He didn't do anything inappropriate. And I said, you know, it's really inappropriate to ruin a woman's career.
Yeah.
And by the way, I want to say that I wasn't ready to go on record for the New York Times, but it was some male editors at the New York Times who presented me with some mathematics that I hadn't been aware of. They said, when he denied you that contributor position that he offered you, we did some research and we found that the average wage of a Fox contributor is about $200,000 a year.
Oh.
The average length of time they stay is about 5 years.
Wow.
Almost every contributor gets a book. These books usually become New York Times bestseller.
Yeah.
So basically, when he barred you from taking the job he had offered you, he basically took $1 million out of your baby's food budget.
Yep. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
When you think of it in math,
yeah.
you're like, oh, yeah. now I get it.
I never got paid to be a contributor. The minute I asked, I was never heard from again. And no one sexually harassed me or asked me out. I got nothing out of it.
This is true.
Jody and I did not have the option to be shipped to a modeling agency in Paris when we were hefty little children with unibrows growing up.
I can't imagine.
But Dr. Wendy Walsh, fantastic radio show on KFI. The podcast is Mating Matters. Mm-hmm. The more important question, can you find someone just like you except gay for me? Bisexual's fine.
Well, I will say this, Stephanie, that I don't think this is a surprise to you that sexual orientation is fluid, and across a lifespan, postmenopausal women are most likely to start to behave.
Are you saying that boyfriend you were with last Saturday might be?
Oh, stop it, Stephanie.
I'm saying you never know. You got to keep your options open.
Oh, yay. All right, Dr. Wendy Walsh, thanks so much. Please come back. This was fantastic. I'm sorry this took so long to get together, but thank you so much.
I know,
much.
But we did it.
Yes,
we did it. Yay. Love you.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Care.
There
Bye-bye.
She goes.
Bye.
The impossibly beautiful Dr. Wendy Walsh. That's my life. That's my life, Jody. I'm like, who is that woman? Why? Oh, that's her boyfriend. There was a little glimmer of hope at the end there, wasn't there?
There was.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Never know.
All right. Midlife fluidity.
She shot that down, though.
No, I think she planted the seed is what she did. Oh. We heard that differently.
I think we
she
did.
She brought up fluidity in later life. Okay.